Okay, so we're here for episode 123 of Powers and Principalities. Joe, how you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, this evening we decided to talk about impeachment, particularly presidential impeachment. It's in the news. Apparently, Donald Trump might face impeachment before next year's election. So, impeachment. Of course, the only two presidents to be impeached were President Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton. And, of course, Richard Nixon faced impeachment, but he resigned before the House could hold a vote on that. I think the House voted out a committee to pass the bills of impeachment, and he resigned in reaction to that after being told that the party could not defend him in Congress. The right to impeach public officials is secured by the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 2, and 3, which discuss the procedure, and in Article 2, Section 4, which indicates the grounds for impeachment. The President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Removing an official from office requires two steps: a formal accusation or impeachment by the House of Representatives, and two, a trial and conviction by the Senate. Impeachment requires a majority vote of the House. Conviction is more difficult, requiring two-thirds vote by the Senate. The Vice President presides over the Senate proceedings in the case of all officials except the President, whose trial is presided over by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Bribery, perjury, and treason are among the least ambiguous reasons meriting impeachment, but the ocean of wrongdoing encompassed by the Constitution's stipulation of high crimes and misdemeanors is vast. Abuse of power and serious misconduct in the office fits this category, but one act that is definitely not grounds for impeachment is partisan discord. Well, since 1797, the House of Representatives has impeached 16 federal officials. These include two presidents, a cabinet member, a senator, a justice of the Supreme Court, 11 federal judges. Of those, the Senate has convicted and removed seven, all of them judges. Judge John Pickering of New Hampshire was the first impeached official actually convicted. He was found guilty of drunkenness and unlawful rulings on March 12, 1804, and was believed to have been insane. Associate Justice Samuel Chase, a strong Federalist, was impeached but acquitted of judicial bias against anti-Federalists. The acquittal on March 1, 1805 established the political differences were not grounds for impeachment. Other officials impeached were implicated in bribery, cheating on income tax, perjury, and treason. Of course, I mentioned the two presidents, Andrew Johnson and William Jefferson Clinton. They have the distinction of being impeached. Johnson was a Southern Democrat who became president after Lincoln's assassination in 1865. He supported a mild policy of Reconstruction after the Civil War. This, caught the attention or criticism of the radical Republicans in Congress, who supported a more, rigorous or less than lenient policy towards the Confederates. Johnson also opposed the various civil rights bills and also opposed the 14th Amendment. The radical Republicans sought to diminish Johnson, and they passed with a Tenure of Office Act in 1867. Which prohibited the president from dismissing office holders without the Senate's approval. A defiant Johnson tested the constitutionality of the act by attempting to oust Secretary of War Edwin Stanton. His violation of the act became the basis for his impeachment in 1868. But the Senate was one vote short of the two-thirds majority needed to convict, and Johnson was acquitted on May 26, 1868. It's generally agreed among historians that the impeachment, again, was political in nature. The Tenure of Office Act was partially repealed and subsequently declared unconstitutional several decades later. Bill Clinton, in his part, was caught up in the impeachment largely because of his own personal failings. He was caught, this stemmed, I believe, originally from the Paula Jones trial or lawsuit against Bill Clinton. And during the process of discovery, it became exposed that he had had an affair with an intern named Monica Lewinsky. She was caught the attention of Kenneth Starr, who was the special prosecutor, who was then investigating the Whitewater scandal. And that kind of goes into this, where the that in Arkansas, but it became evidence was provided that Bill Clinton had engaged in perjury. Obstruction of justice, suborning perjury, and abuse of power. And this is what sparked the impeachment inquiry into Bill Clinton. He was eventually impeached by the House of Representatives on four counts. And again, he was eventually acquitted, I believe, in February of 1999 of those charges. He beat the rap. Of course, there's also the case of, we mentioned, Richard Nixon, who caught up in the Watergate conspiracy. We can get into some of these the details of these scandals. The break-in at the Democrat National Committee headquarters at the Watergate building. It was subsequently revealed that the White House, with Nixon, had tried to cover up the burglary, and he was exposed that he was, I guess it was alleged that he was engaged in obstruction of justice, abuse of power, and so this began the whole Watergate drama, spearheaded by the Washington Post, Bob Woodward, Carl Bernstein. There's, I guess, an hidden grammar or deeper intrigue into that whole affair, perhaps we can get into. But nevertheless, through 1973, 1974, there were the hearings. And in the summer of 74, it was clear he was going to be impeached. I believe the House Judiciary Committee voted out of committee to impeach the president. And it was that point that he was told that the House, the Republicans in the Congress, could not hold ground or defend him. So he resigned on August 9th, 1974. Other presidents have caught in scandals, but never reached the level of impeachment. So that's kind of like a brief history of impeachment. And of course, we have the current situation with Donald Trump, whose impeachment is, I guess originally people thought it might be the Russia thing, but that fell apart. And now it's the Ukraine. So it's still that part of the world. But Ukraine, apparently he's been accused of abuse of power, asking for favors, quid pro quo with the president of Zelensky, I think is his name, the president of Ukraine, regarding an investigation into Hunter Biden, the son of former vice president and also current presidential candidate Joe Biden. Hunter Biden was, it's been alleged that Joe Biden stifled an investigation in Ukraine, and the President Trump was apparently asking for the Ukrainian government to investigate this and provide some evidence, and then for some reason or other, this has been construed as abuse of power and looking for a quid pro quo. So the House has again begun hearings or investigation into possible impeachment charges against the current president. Of course, this is about a year before the next election, where he's running for re-election. So we might have a situation where a president is running for re-election at the same time he's being impeached by the House of Representatives, which is currently controlled by the Democrats. It'd be interesting to see how this plays out in electoral politics, what it all means. So that's kind of a brief, kind of some superficial overview of it all about impeachment. We can get into some of the more details, what's really going on here. So what do you have to say about presidential impeachments?
Well, I have, yes, it may shock you, but I have kind of like a different idea about impeachment, you know. Which is that, at least in the current moment, it's just theater. There's nothing real here. I mean, obviously it's theater, right? I mean, no one really expects Trump to leave office because of some kind of interaction somehow with the Ukraine, right? So. Even at the level that it is being presented to the public, it's theater. It's not a real thing. They're just, if you take it seriously, you say, well, you know, Pelosi and these guys are trying to create a political firestorm that will impact the upcoming election, and this is basically kind of an abuse of the powers of impeachment that Congress has, because they're turning it into a partisan cesspool, right? This was kind of with this insincere impeachment idea that's just there to make Trump look bad so they can have a chance of defeating him. So that's the level, I think, that, you know, the public is being shown this process. But I think that actually what is really happening is that there's just such a lot of the public that are just not believing the political system is real. And I think this is completely due, or like not completely, but largely due to alt media. I think that alt media is accelerating the effect that you could see even during my lifetime. You could see that some people were just dropping out. There was just sort of this political process that just went on and on, never seemed to make any sense. Wars came and went. The Federal Reserve continued to base currency. Life just got worse and worse. And there were, you know, some people who were very partisan, you know, like cultural Marxists seemed to have a lot of political energy. You know, they would be organizing. I mean, here in California, you know, the UCs have a lot of, there's some passion there. But in general, I think people are just kind of, it's like a bad TV movie. They just don't watch it. And I think that the impeachment circuses are just a way to try to recreate the belief that the democracy, the process of democracy is real, right? Because this is a critical component of the mind control, is that you're not slaves, because there is this election process in which you get to choose the next president or whatever, you know, your congressperson. So this is why, like, in my opinion, you know, you get Trump versus Hillary, because they are the most hateable people they can come up with. And then the stronger the hatred you have toward one side or the other, the more the election result has a meaning. And then you don't suspect that actually both Hillary and Donald are, you know, secret society, CFR, automatons that will just do the bidding of the oligarchs, right? So this is the idea of, I think, with the impeachment of Trump, is they're just trying to create passion that people, the, you know, few Trump supporters or people who actually feel that Trump has some kind of legitimacy as a political leader, they will fight against these left wing, you know, partisans. And then, of course, the left wing, they will rally around, Elizabeth Warren, whoever's leading the thing, Nancy Pelosi. it's kind of ludicrous if you know anything about the Pelosi family background and, you know, just the kind of criminality of the four families that run California. It's sort of hilarious that she would be trying to, you know, bring, you know, kind of impropriety against Trump. But there it is, you know. Anyway, so that's my honest opinion, is that, I read the news. I try to not just completely drop out of that. I do pay attention. I mean, I know, for example, that Trump is president, so you can see I have completely fucked up. Yeah. But I don't really take it very seriously. And I would recommend, you know, my opinion to people who, you know, hear my voice and are curious about whatever advice I would give in this regard, is that don't take it seriously. Don't waste any energy or emotion in this process. Rather, take the time and then try to study it as mind control. Try to understand how it's being used, and then discuss that with family and friends. So that would be the way I would I would respond to it. Before the show, I have to just digress for a second, and because I was curious about the first, you know, in 2016, they had, this collusion thing. And I was curious what Wikipedia had to say about it. And so I read in the following statement, it says that there was alleged collusion with Russia during the campaign, alleged obstruction of justice with respect to the investigation of the collusion claim, And then here's the winner. And accusations of associating the presidency with white nationalism, neo-Nazism, and hatred. So this was actually like I guess expressed as, you know, the grounds for impeachment.
What they do is they apply certain hate terms or demon terminology to their point of view.
Yeah, I mean this is not I'm not, you know, conspiracy theory.
But what neo-Nazi? I wonder who are the neo-Nazis?
I don't know, but anyway, so I read this and I have to admit, Tim, I laughed. I laughed because I was thinking of, well, this was bad, but if they said he's associated the presidency with Jewish nationalism, Zionism, and love.
Yeah.
Right. The flip.
Or neo-Bolshevism.
Well, but I'm just, but that's pejorative. But I mean, if you just said, okay, well, here's the other side of would that have been, okay, well, that's fine. I mean, that you can associate with the presidency, but white nationalism, neo-Nazism, and hatred, right? Because these things are all, you know, so intimately associated. And, you know, Tim, the reason why I laughed, because just before I went to Wikipedia, I was been reading about Lord Palmerston and the way he treated the Irish on his estates, because this is like a little area of research I'm curious about. And, you know, why I thought that was interesting is because, remember, Palmerston is really ground zero for Jewish nationalism, Zionism, and I guess whatever you want to call it, love, you know, because he's really the guy who got the whole thing started. You know, it wasn't the Zionists in the 19th century where he was already, you know, 50 years, the whole Masonic project had been going on. And so that's why it's funny, because Palmerston was such a racist. You know, he just hated the Irish. You read about him sending people off of his estates in winter because he didn't want to pay any tax, which they were going to levy against him. So he just sent them off his estates and just sent them away to Canada with no clothes or anything and no job, just to freeze to death. And this is the same time when he was blowing up the Chinese left and right. And remember, Palmerston was the head Freemason of Asia. So anyway, I'm sorry to digress like this, but I'm just saying that this is an example of how it is a circus. It's kind of under the category of bread and circuses, you know, of like just very crude theater that they present the public to distract them, you know, in this case from the fact that they are becoming enslaved, right, bit by bit with the technology that the oligarchs possess. But that's why I'm pretty sure I'm going to go on out on the limb, and I've been incorrect, you know, because remember I predicted that during Donald's first term a sex tape would emerge, and I was wrong about that. I mean, that the woman that he I guess hung out with whatever her name is, you know, Danielle Steele or some kind. I guess there were some nude pictures of her, but it was nothing like I thought it was going to be. I thought there would be like, you know, I thought it was going to be like a Clinton Lewinsky, you know, like modern version where you had like videotapes and stuff. I predicted this and I was wrong. But here I'm predicting that they are going to try it, because I think this will create the greatest, you know, stink bomb emotional distraction from the reality is that whoever the Democrats produce to run against Trump is going to be like Hillary, just another side of the same coin.
Yeah, I mean, look at these things as distractions or diversions, I think, is an appropriate way to look at impeachment. It's again a way to get both sides riled up, but if you look at the history of impeachment, the most recent examples, the Watergate scandal, where Nixon faced impeachment. If you accept the official narrative is that, you know, Nixon was caught doing some bad things, he tried to cover it up, and then was forced to resign because of pressure from Capitol Hill and the garrulous reporting of Woodward and Bernstein over there at the Washington Post. But if you look at it really just beneath the surface, you'll see that you'll see evidence of a coup. And this isn't to say that Nixon was a hero, just that Nixon was taken out for some reason or another. I guess he wasn't assassinated, which is an improvement of what occurred a decade before. But he apparently got the ire of the CIA for a couple reasons. I think he planned to remove, what's his name? Who was the CIA director then?
Bush?
No, it was a guy just...
Dulles?
No.
Darn
it. I forget his name.
Yeah, this is amazing. I can't.
Is the one that is the guy that the
Colby Dulles?
The guy before Colby.
Helms.
Thank you, Dick Helms, Richard Helms. Right. Thank you so much. And so there's sort of the CIA was not responding to Nixon's demands to see files on what he called the Bay of Pigs thing.
Yeah.
Read the JFK assassination. There's also. If you read Russ Baker's book about this, this also involved the Bushes, George H.W. Bush, who did become CIA director under Ford. So he was helped in that. He was kind of rose to that position with the – he was aided by Nixon's fall. But this – according to Russ Baker, he became a target of the Bushes because Nixon didn't pick him for vice president in 1968. And that was sort of the plan. Nixon had gotten his political start – from George Bush's father, Prescott Bush, out in California. And so he did make him envoy to China and ambassador to the UN. And, of course, it was during the Watergate scandal that George Bush was the head of the Republican National Convention. Later on, I think George H.W. Bush claimed that his father played a role in getting Nixon to resign. So there's that element to it. Of course, George H.W. Bush was CIA skull and bones all the way. But if you look at the Watergate scandal itself, the principal figures all around Nixon's fall all have ties to intelligence. This is Bob Woodward, Office of Naval Intelligence. I believe Leon Jaworski had ties to intelligence, CIA. Butterfield, the guy who reveals the existence of these tapes, I think he also has ties to intelligence. If you read, there's a book called
The guy who was actually Deep Throat, it was some Felt, Jewish guy.
Mark Felt.
Didn't he also have a ties to intelligence? I thought he did.
The claim to that is he was mad because he wasn't picked to succeed J. Edgar Hoover. So that's his
parody. That's obviously ties to intelligence.
Yeah. But there's, according to Russ Baker, Deep Throat was sort of never really one person. It was a mixture of people, composite character. And of course, at the time, he was, Bob Woodward was being fed information about Dick Nixon from the CIA. And I think it was the Robert R. Mullen Company, which is sort of a CIA front company. I think this is where E. Howard Hunt worked. And all the guys, if you look at the burger itself, all these professionals, it was intentionally bungled. It was intentionally bungled, it looks like. And so it appears to be a setup. And, we have that. So again, the public's never told this. But even behind this, why he would have, another reason why Nixon might have come to class with the CIA was at the time Nixon had announced his war on drugs, particularly heroin, and he was trying to exert control over the DEA and take over drug investigations, interdiction and control from the DEA and also the CIA. And what happened was this coincided with Nixon. He was kind of shutting down the Marseille connection, which had been in operation since the late 1940s. This was the Luciano project that was started during the Second World War, continued in the Cold War, played a big part in the CIA manipulating elections in Italy, making sure the communists didn't win. And sort of the quid pro was that the Luciano and other gangsters could run their drugs, ship their heroin into the United States. And this, of course, probably became a huge fund of black money, black ops, dark money, secret money to fund operations. But Nixon was trying to get control of this, and so shutting down the Marseille and putting more of an emphasis on the drugs coming in from Asia and through Mexico. So we have competing factions here. This is Henrik Kruger's thesis in this book, The Great Heroin Coup. Interesting stuff. But none of this is being reported to the public. These intrigues that are indeed going on is not being reported to the public. Instead, they get this story, this moral drama that's fed to him with Watergate, where Nixon's biggest, you know, offense is trying to obstruct an investigation, which this, you know, spotty evidence for. You have these tapes and these things, which people infer as proof. But the whole burglary seemed to be a setup. You know, the whole leaving the tape on the door and leaving it ripped so the security guard could catch him and these things. You know, and the whole plumber operation, the whole plumber crew, I think was started to seal up leaks. You know, this is the what's his name over there at Daniel Ellsberg.
Yeah.
Over at the Rand Corporation, which some people see that whole Pentagon paper leak as a CIA operation to leak it and put all the blame on the Vietnam War on the Pentagon and sort of distract away from the CIA's decades-long involvement in Vietnam and also in the drug trade in Vietnam. That's what Daniel Ellsberg operation was. It was sort of a limited hangout diversion. And so that's what the Watergate situation appears to be. It's very interesting. And I do recommend Russ Baker's book because it talks about the role of the Bushes, this sort of this hidden grammar, and also Kruger's book on the Great Heroin Coup. Because there's a lot of intrigue going this time in the mid-70s about control of a drug interdiction, and this is when the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs was shut down, and they recreated it with the DEA. With the DEA, I recommend the book, the work of Douglas Valentine on this. What emerged with the DEA was an agency that was largely under the control of the CIA. So now the drug trade could be managed. What we're seeing here is all these intrigues is not so much fighting drugs. It's is sort of competing factions to control drugs, control factions, control the flow of drugs, and manage it so this intelligence agency throughout the world can manage the drug trade for the benefit of the agencies and the agencies that the entities that the agencies work for, which is ultimately the oligarchs. So that's interesting.
Yeah,
does it make sense? I kind
of totally makes sense. I mean, well, you know, because in fact, it makes perfect sense because you know, it is always a question as to what extent do the oligarchs have control over the puppets,
mm-hmm.
and to what extent is their real history taking place? You know, in other words. You know, maybe at the very top level, they have some influence over people like Nixon and, Reagan, we talked about, they may have oaths that they take, but there also may be some existential rough edges around them that just get loose every once in a while.
Yeah.
And you need to rein someone in. And now you have real history, not just theater.
Well, because human beings are dynamic. They're not just
I think the secret society is becoming more and more, monolithic, but I think there was really, very much different degrees of participation in it at certain points in time in our history. And so, so with Nixon, he's Bohemian Grove, but you don't have a lot of other direct connections into secret society control. So who is he really? I thought at the time that Watergate seemed very suspicious because even though I wasn't at this point in my life, cynical, but there was just too many kind of cliffhanger type positions. It just seemed, you'd have
tape.
with the missing, 20 minutes, and then you'd have like a revelation about this statement Nixon had made. And then you had that miserable, creepy guy, make his revelations. He was there and he talked to Nixon and said it was a cancer on the presidency.
Well, John Dean, who also has ties to intelligence. He was whose acts to the president. If you follow that trail, that's really interesting. How you got into the White House in the first place? Right. Russ Baker writes about that. Yeah.
I mean, it just seems to me that Dean is like 100% just to me, he's just secret society, New World Order creature that they put in there. And so anyway, so I think if you just stand back from the whole Watergate saga and look at it as theater and just say, well, was this just a theatrical production? You can make a good case, just like you can with Lewinsky. Because there was just this kind of progression of dramatic tension.
Yeah.
You know, everything just gets worse and worse, and then you have the, you know, the conclusion, and it just seems theatrical, but a little tough to prove. I mean, I would, you know, note that Woodward seems artificial because, you know, he's a Yale Secret Society guy. What is it? Like,
oh, yeah.
Scroll and paper. It's the Skull and Bones, you know, annex.
The Office of Naval Intelligence, yeah.
And of course, he comes right from Naval Intelligence. But to me, even more kind of telling, the more interesting connection is Haldeman, because his father was in the uplifting Lucifer club in Santa Monica Canyon with Walt Disney. I mean, this was the most, you know, and Frank Baum, you know, Wizard of Oz guy, mm-hmm. that was the most Freemasonic eruption imaginable. I mean, uplifting Lucifer, you know, is kind of a charming wix.
Of course, then there's always Ben Bradley, right?
And then Bradley, right. I mean, he's like, his family's Masonic for like all the way back to the Green Dragon in the Revolutionary War.
And he's CIA, so.
And he's CIA. So you see, you know, if you look at it in that light, you get a sense of it as possibly just theater, but also they could be managing real history theatrically, you know. And so it's really hard to know, but I do think that it's important for people to look at impeachment as propaganda. You know, in other words, to say, okay, well, you know, the newspapers have had at my mind for years. I mean, the Watergate thing, my God, that thing just dragged on forever.
Yeah.
It was just relentless, you know, and it was just the headlines, you know, Saturday Night Massacre.
Well, that's the chance that, you know, that every other story that you know, Bob Woodward was apparently running the night court beat.
Yeah.
And on come in these four or five burglars, and that's how he gets on the story, and then all of a sudden he's on the hunt after the president. And Ben Bradley trusts us with these two cub reporters. It's just made for a movie, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it was. You know, and the alchemical aspect of it is just that here is an evil white male. I mean, they just took Nixon, and he became the poster boy for the evil white male. And this was, you know, I think that's kind of what I see as, you know, one of the major purposes for Watergate. They were trying to rotate the consciousness of the public away from seeing, you know, the white male in a positive light and into a negative one, because, you know, obviously they have, you know, feminism, weaponized integration, cultural Marxism, you know, these things are obviously coming online. And so the key obstacle would be, you know, a positive image about a white male, you know, the kind of, you know, and it's hard to imagine, Tim, but at one point, you know, there were like white males in television that were very positively represented. Like, you know, yes. I mean, now it would just almost be like a cartoon if such thing happened. But like, you know, Father Knows Best. Now, there's an interesting title for, you know, TV show. But see, that kind of stuff has to leave if you're going to implement cultural Marxism on a broad scale. And so Nixon was just a very important part of that.
Yeah. Interesting also is what the Watergate situation facilitated was, you have, of course, just before Nixon resigns, you have his vice president, Spiro Agnew, is caught up in this charges of sort of bribery, which you could probably ensnare any politician in doing. He wasn't really exceptional. So Spiro Agnew resigns, pleads no contest, resigns. So then Gerald R. Ford is instituted. Of course, where did Gerald Ford serve in the previous decade? He was on the Warren Commission. I think he's the one that actually moved the bullet hole in the shirt down to justify the magic bullet thing.
But he wasn't in the Freemason Lodge with the plastic bananas, you know, and the, you know, like the.
But who does Gerald Ford pick as his vice president?
Yeah.
Gerald Ford picks Nelson Rockefeller.
Right, I know.
Then right after he does that, the couple shots are taken at Ford.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's like if
you. And Rockefeller actually played a big key role in a very important role when he was vice president in getting the free trade agreement passed Congress that was giving the president authority, fast track authority, I think.
Right.
I think Rockefeller played a big part in that, and that plays a big part in the oligarchs' plans for, you know, in the 70s and 80s with the shifting the geography of production and the sort of the deindustrialization of the United States in these things, and the assault on labor.
It's incredible. I mean, and this shows you just how, you know, the idea of the representative democracy in the United States, how silly it is. You know, how you know, you would have a Rockefeller like leading the charge here, like with, you know, talking about the benefits of free trade and how, I mean, remember, it was the workers' paradise, right? That's how they're selling this thing. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about losing jobs. There'll be more jobs, because when you unleash the efficiency of American capitalism in the world, you'll see that it isn't going to be just, you know, our manufacturing. It'll be manufacturing everywhere, and there'll be more and more. We'll be selling. It'll be so much money. We'll just be swimming in it. I mean, this was the idea.
Well, you tap into the slave labor around the world.
Right. Well, you tapped into slave labor, and then they left the American middle class without anywhere to get a paycheck.
Oh, then they introduced the credit card.
Yeah, that's right. So now we have debt, and we have, you know, working moms, and so the whole thing has just been a rifle that has been aimed right at us from the, you know, but you know, part of that, I really do think that Nixon was, you know, kind of, he was set up as, you know, as an icon, something that people could point to when they would say, well, you don't really want white males to have political power because, well, Nixon. And I think to some extent, Trump was the same thing. Yeah. I mean, you know,
remember how much hatred people hated Nixon even before Watergate?
Oh, it was incredible. Yeah. You know, it was just incredible. He represented the establishment, which was basically just a euphemism for white male. You know, they talk about euphemism for, you know, like different ways that anti-Semites, you know, have like euphemisms, like Zod, for example, is a hate speech, you know. Well, on the other side of the coin, you have like, you know, the establishment, you know, which was, or the man, you know, they had all these euphemisms, which just meant that there was some male authority in the United States that was of European generation, because we were like 90% of the population and males had always actively participated in politics. Hard to believe, but that was the case historically. Mm-hmm. And the United States. And so you started to turn that around. And then you have, you know, Nixon was really kind of an accelerator of all of that, because he was just, you know, he just looked like Richard III. You know, he was just so evil, and you know, they would care. He was so easy to characterize.
Yeah.
He was just a cartoon's dream. And then with Clinton and Lewinsky, I mean, that also, I think I'm almost positive that's just all theater. I mean, I think you can make a good case that Watergate had existential aspects to it. I couldn't disprove, but I thought that, you know, that the Clinton Lewinsky thing, which led to that impeachment, was just 100% theater. It was just a way to get sexuality unbridled, to show and also show the white male is, you know, incapable of having any kind of political power, because they just exploit it for sexual, you know, impropriety. And then the whole way that thing was set up so they could just talk about it for years.
Yeah.
Of course, the, you know, the triumphant moment where the blue dress is, you know, brought forward to the sixth grade, you know, boys, you know, who were watching this on TV. I mean, that was a great moment for American, you know, middle class parents to have to explain what that was all about. So, and of course, at the same time, pornography is just, you know, ramping up dramatically during this period, you know. And so I just thought that was all theater. And I think that it'll be interesting to see if this thing with Trump is if they take it, you know, and they actually try the process. They have control. They have enough control to at least do a pretty good run at it in the House.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting with the whole Clinton saga, the impeachment, is like Watergate. There's a whole backstory of criminality and drug running, which Ken Starr ignored. Of course, it's interesting why he would have ignored it, because Ken Starr was, I believe, the assistant to William French Smith, the Attorney General for Reagan, in 1982, when that memorandum of understanding was written by the Justice Department to the CIA, waiving any responsibility for CIA agents to report any drug running. And this, of course, this is the run-up in the war in Central America, when drugs would play a big part in funding a lot of that operation and a lot of other things. But the Whitewater thing, scandal, Madison Guarantee Trust, Whitewater, you have how a lot of that money that was being laundered through the Arkansas Development Finance Corporation, which Clinton and his buddies were getting their weeks bet, beaks wet in.
Yeah.
And the use of the Arkansas National Guard Armory and part of, I guess, providing arms to the Contras. And this one thing that the Kenstar investigation in, he just ignored was that, and also the fact that this investigation, if you listen to whistleblowers like Terry Reid, is that Clinton was working in the 80s with the Reagan administration, primarily George Bush, who really ran the show during the Reagan administration at the National Security Council, and all that operation. But that whole Whitewater, Madison Guarantee, Arkansas scene, you could have opened a whole can of worms, but that was completely ignored by Ken Starr as the moment he was given evidence that Clinton was suborning perjury in the efforts to suppress the Paula Jones lawsuit. And that became the focus of the investigation. And admittedly, Bill Clinton was guilty of everything he was charged with. It's just that the Senate made a political calculation that they weren't going to convict for it. But I don't think anyone in dispute he was guilty of it. The question of whether or not it rises to the level of impeachment, it is a crime. And there were people at the time sitting in jail for committing, perjury on sexual matters when there's investigations about sexual impropriety or sex abuse or misconduct. You are under oath. But again, they made the calculation that the Senate looked at Clinton's popularity ratings and they didn't feel they compelled to convict. I think it was fell like about 5 votes short of a 2/3 majority in these things. But again, we're dealing with where the press accounts completely ignored the backstory, or at least the hidden story of what was going on in the 80s and 90s with Clinton. Not to mention all, the body trail, right?
It's ridiculous. I mean, he's as murderous as Lord Palmerston, for God's sake. They're just slaughtering anybody who has any kind of information that might be brought to the public that would make the public suspicious about the motivation behind these people. But I think that, again, I hate to be cynical, but I think the calculation was made that we really want to have the Monica Lewinsky event be something on the news for 2 years. I think we really need to talk about oral sex on CNN and on CBS.
Yeah, yeah.
We have to do that for 2 years because, even though we don't want to, we need to do it because, for heaven's sakes, it's an aspect of the impeachment of the president. So they have the grounds for, what becomes one of the most alchemical.
Yeah, and Clinton Clinton made this situation inevitable when he started playing games with the words, what the meaning of is.
Is, yeah.
Then he gets into this excruciating detail what exactly they did do. What Clinton thought sex is or was, and it's ridiculous. It's
But it's just fantastic fodder for the onset of pornography.
Yes, and of course this is in the early stages of the internet, right?
Yeah, of course.
When they're passing the Communications Decency Act, which allowed for the streaming of pornography.
Exactly. And see, to me, this was completely linked. I just see this was like a. This is sort of like getting the Hays Code lifted at exactly the time, when the movie theaters are now everywhere in the United States and they can start basically moving the kind of unbridled sexuality into movie theaters, and glamorize it, So I think
I remember at the time arguing with someone at a bar and about the impeachment. And he says the guy there was considered himself, I guess, rather sophisticated, but he said he didn't want the president impeached because it might affect the stock market. Doesn't it bother you if a president who's openly admitted lying, committing perjury, and not being held accountable? What does that say about the rule of law? I don't have much faith in rule of law, but he's openly mocking of the rule of law. So I don't care about that. As so that's how decadent, you know, him and many other people.
Yeah, I mean, at least he was, you know, keen enough to know there was a relationship between the two things. I mean, sad to say, most Americans wouldn't even be aware of that because they're so downtrodden by, you know, crushing poverty, you know, compound interest that they're having to pay if they own a home, no jobs. I mean, it's just, you know, the level of kind of the intellectual power of the American people is just in such sharp and
rapid. I mean, going to your thesis of this whole thing kind of being staged.
Yeah.
Is, of course, in the fall of 1997, late fall of 1997, this was a few months before the scandal broke, I believe in January 1998, the movie Wag the Dog came out.
Yeah.
Which involved this very scenario, by the way. And then, of course, the story involves the president waging a fake war, not just waging a war, but a fake war on television. That's, again, so this is that movie with Robert De Niro, where he plays this sort of, I guess he's a political fixer and uses a director in Hollywood to fake a war to distract away from the scandal. But interestingly enough, the movie involves a sexual encounter between the president and a very young girl. And this is just 2 months before the scandal breaks. But more importantly is in that movie, there's a picture with the president, the person who playing the president, who looks kind of like Bill Clinton. From the back, and he is hugging or shaking a hand of a girl.
She has a beret on. I mean, you could take that picture and put it right into the Lewinsky news story. No one would even know the difference.
What are the odds of a girl wearing a beret in real life capturing the same picture? A girl with whom the president has had an affair with, and then that being picked for a movie probably filmed a year or two before.
The same odds of the moon hitting the earth tomorrow morning. I mean, there are just no odds at all. There's no chance that could happen accidentally.
So what does that say about the whole, you know?
Yeah, so it means, so you can see the foreshadowing. It's just like 911. When you look at all of the foreshadowing for 911, there's just, you know, it's just voluminous. I can't say it.
Yeah, voluminous, yeah. Sorry, I couldn't say beret. I said Bandera.
This isn't because I can't talk. I mean, it's impossible. I'm too old. But you know, the thing is that you know, so there's no way that this is circumstance. They love to do this. They just love this, where they can actually put foreshadowing out and then ridicule the stupidity of the people.
But
who
I
can't
point that out to people. So what does that say about the whole thing?
Right. Well,
about politics in general.
Yeah, well,
did you see that thing with Greta Thunberg, where you know Trump is at the UN and she has the scowling little teenager behind Trump, and there's a picture of the Simpsons. Now, of course, the Simpsons things might have predated that, so I'm assuming that the picture was staged to mimic the Simpsons, as opposed to the Simpsons foretelling something. But it kind of tells you about, you know.
it was really funny because Red Ice, it's a internet alt media show, got censored, just taken off, just ripped off YouTube. It was really popular, 100,000 viewers, you know, it was very popular, got pulled out. And I wondered if it was because they really did a great job exposing Greta. You know, they showed all of these backgrounds and the New World Order characters. And then her mom actually had statements about how, well, we always sell our soul to Satan. You know, she had made these kinds of statements. At least I'm not sure the Red Eyes presented that, but I think they did.
But didn't she take like a former Rothschild yacht to the UN?
Yeah, it was something like that. But the thing that I'm not sure they caught in relation to the kid is that the kid is basically autistic. You know, she's a mild Asperger, I guess. You know, and that they were touting that, or she was touting it as how it gave her like special powers of concentration.
Yeah, she can see carbon dioxide or something.
Right. I mean, and you know, this was like, again, this is like alchemical crap, you know, because you could see that they're not only creating this idea of the boogeyman of global warming and the evil white male that is, you know, just polluting the planet. How dare you? You know, she was like,
again, this cult of youth lecturing adults.
But she's also going after the idea of normalizing autism, which is something that I'm, you know, have talked about a lot. I mean, I'm very frightened of this because I do see that's where they're taking us. And so they were just like they would normalize pornography. They would make sure that everyone was okay with neural diversity. You know, when you get one out of two kids that are autistic and the other child, the one who's not, is, you know, has lower than expected IQ, that's just neural diversity, Tim. There's nothing to worry about here. So that's kind of what I saw with this snarling little kid.
Yeah, no one's addressing what caused the autism or Asperger's, whether it's some sort of, external thing, like problems in Swedish life. You know, she's...
Yeah, or vaccination.
Vaccination, or, yeah, like that, yeah.
Toxic food, who knows? But, yeah, that doesn't... They talk about how it gives her these special mental powers, like, gee, I wish my kid was autistic too, so they could be like Greta. Yeah, but... Yeah, so it's, it's the world kind of changes when you look at it through the lens of, well, what's the secret society up to? Because then you look at stuff like, the impeachment stuff. It just, to me, it becomes more and more that in some ways being used as propaganda.
Well, I mean, obviously, when we started talking about it, it's been trivialized. Great.
Yeah.
Where now it seems like it's like a part of everyday partisan politics, the threat, where 20 years ago it was like, whoa, this is the, this is the button,
I think going forward, you'll see that the impeachment proceeding will just begin the presidential election campaign.
The public's not excited by it either. It's like, it's just partisan wrangling.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. They have to create, the threshold, because the people are numb, and they want them to be engaged. You know, they want them to actually believe in the democratic process, that it's real. They don't want them to see it as theater, and so they try to create as much drama as they can in these things. I hope that it has just the opposite effect.
Well, what it does with the political process, the normal political process, not just elections, but also legislation, legislative agenda, policies, is that no problems are really being addressed.
Right, of course not.
Right, no one's dealing with the immigration issue. No one's dealing with what's happening demographically in the United States. It's just going on.
Well, is anyone talking about the fact that we've lost 60% of our sperm in the last 40 years? Where is that? That should be the only story, because this is like, we are literally, we're going out of existence, and we are just so full of toxicity that it is something so fundamental to our, generative process has been reduced by 60% in just 40 years.
Yeah, Greta Thunberg's talking about carbon dioxide, which is a natural, necessary, and the solution for carbon dioxide is just trees, right? But she's not, of course, and she's a proxy, of course. What it means is that the official environmental movement is not dealing with toxic vaccines or genetically modified food, corporate food, things, our diet, our polluted food supply, and these things, what they're putting in the water.
She's a 10-year-old kid with a bad temper. Why are we even watching her?
Yeah. She's been ignored by her parents her entire life.
She's like snapping and this, where does this attitude come from? Is it trained? I mean, it just seemed amazing to me that
apparently 80% of teenage girls in Sweden have eating disorders, have problems, so.
It's a sad. So anyway, we've covered some things from the problem of Sweden, but anyway, so it's like, I think we're going to see, Tim, we're going to definitely see this ratchet up. It'll be interesting to see if they actually do go forward. I mean, they can actually conduct the impeachment
during the election.
during the election,
and Trump's just the personality to do that too. It's kind
of
like,
of course. I mean, He will go into his pompous white male mode, and tweet how irrational these things are, and while this is going on, I mean, think of the reality of what is happening to the American people, mm-hmm. during this period. Think of how under attack all of the weaponized aspects of our reality.
How about the fact that the average age for children to be exposed to pornography in the United States is now age 11?
Well, how about that as a subject?
Why is that a political issue?
Yeah.
Or the fact of the explosion of pedophilic or child pornography on the internet in the past 10 years.
Yeah, so nothing is being addressed, and instead of it, you're going to get this theater. Hopefully, it will not have the effect. That's why, at the beginning we were talking about, the right approach to take. I mean, the right approach is to ignore this and to focus 100% on the real problems.
I think the American people are following our advice on this one.
I think the American people are following our advice on everything.
No one cares.
I mean, I think, I just think that people, I was talking with a friend of mine who has a position with, I won't mention, but it's a major news network. And she was saying that the actual viewerships is even worse than they've been presenting. Mm-hmm. They've been kind of fudging the numbers, but she says they're just absolutely collapsing. So the internet is becoming, the sole source of information. The legacy media is collapsing. The internet's not quite under control yet. And at the same time, the obvious reality of the plot, the New World Order slave state, is becoming more and more transparent, not just through the alt media, but just because of the, of the establishment, of the slave system apparatus. So, this is a time when they can try to use the distraction aspect of impeachment. But I don't know. I think it's actually really healthy that people just seem completely nonplussed about it. The important thing is that there is growing energy in trying to identify the secret society, who they are, how it works, what is their motivation, getting some DNA testing of these people so we know how it all relates to itself, genetically. I mean, these are the real subjects that need to get out there. And, I think step by step, we're having an impact. We were talking earlier before we started the show about censorship, how you had another video, one of your things was pulled off Vimeo. They're having to pull everywhere, and so I would hope that people listen to us who think this is reasonable analysis. I mean, one thing that should be done is set up your own blog. Just set up your own blog and post it on YouTube. Force them to censor you. Talk about the issues that are real. Talk about it honestly, without rancor, without hatred, but just talk about them. Force YouTube to expose itself as a censoring monster. And also, when they do that, they wreck all of their algorithms, and they can't even function commercially. There should be thousands of these blogs started every day. Mm-hmm. Because and if nothing else, just repeat information that and stuff that should be recorded places. Like, I know that a lot, like, some people have taken our shows and they have them archived. Can go, you can see that someone's got, like, 100 shows archived. Well, if you don't want to go through the bother of doing your own podcast, just set a podcast and put out a Power and Principalities on YouTube.
There's also a site now which actually someone sent me, the guy who runs the New Nationalist website, how they post banned YouTube videos. There's links there. You can watch the videos that were pulled from YouTube. Someone archived them and put them up there, the videos as they existed.
Well, see, this is the workarounds we should be doing, because you can see that we're having effect. They wouldn't have to be doing such ham-handed censorship if this wasn't having effect on the population. If all that was going on was a little tiny group of alt media haters, stimulating one another, they're seeing this have influence.
Radicalizing.
Yeah, I mean, they can see that they cannot possibly stand against the truth. They just can't.
Apparently, purveying or putting out their propaganda to start a war.
Yeah,
that's not radical, I guess.
No, that's.
I guess strictly speaking, it's not. But I'm saying it's like that doesn't have like grave consequences that you know that people should be held accountable for. But if you're talking freely, then you radicalize someone by making it think critically of the official narrative about certain events or think outside the box. Well, that needs to be suppressed. But you know, the Washington Times and the New York Times, the Washington Post can't promote all types of false news stories that's actually foments and creates a war. And no one goes to jail for it. In fact, they're enriched by it.
Right. Well, I mean, just look at, to me, there's a lot of people in the alt media, I think, that are like disinfo agents. I've been given some examples in the last couple of weeks of this stuff going on. I'm sure that they're out there. I'm sure that one of the things they're going to do is try to buy off or just create their own little, basically an alt media type that. Mm-hmm. That it leads the opposition, but at the end of the day, it'll be a cul-de-sac. They'll take you, back into a bad place. But the kind of the dividing line, I think, is 911. I mean, I've never seen anyone really articulate it. And that may not be true, but I mean, in general, it's a really important dividing line. If you just look for that, I mean, buildings don't collapse at free fall speed symmetrically unless it's controlled demolition. And if someone's telling you otherwise, have them explain it. let's really hear, explain how it actually happened. So there are, now that's a news story that, Washington Post and New York Times should be focused on. The fact that they don't is criminal. That's the criminality. You see what I mean? It's the criminality is just the fake narrative that is has as its centerpiece the refusal to just talk about the basic facts surrounding 911.
Yeah, well, that's the same news organs that told you that Watergate was about a third-rate burglary and a contented cover-up. But,
yeah, exactly.
Back to impeachment, though. It's a nice concept, holding public officials accountable and removing them from office when they misbehave or abuse their power in office. It's only been used twice in American history, but that probably Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton certainly aren't the only offenders, Mr. Nixon. Think of all the presidential crimes or crimes that have been committed from the Oval Office or ordered or facilitated throughout American history. Whether it's what Woodrow Wilson pulled in getting the country into the war in 1917, all the machinations and intrigues of the Roosevelt administration, and the Pearl Harbor and what he was doing in the Atlantic to start a war, and what he did during the war. You can probably pick out a lot going on during the Eisenhower administration, the Kennedy and Johnson administrations, of course. You have unilateral wars being waged by Clinton. Clinton wasn't impeached for his war against Serbia. He was impeached for the Monica Lewinsky thing. So, you know what the priorities are, So all the great crimes that were committed throughout U.S. history in the name of national security or politics or policy, yet two presidents have only been impeached, never convicted, and for relatively trivial matters compared to the great crimes of state. So it says a lot about the true nature of our system.
One president. I mean, Nixon was he wasn't, but I mean, he had to resign. But I mean, he was. A hateful white male, and Clinton, he was a sexual philanderer. Mm-hmm. So these are the crimes that you get to watch on TV, whereas the real crimes that millions of people are dying because of, these things aren't even brought forward as the potential for crimes. I mean, because they don't want these issues discussed.
Yeah.
That's the last thing they would ever do would be to bring an impeachment forward about a real issue, because it would lead to the public discussing it and learning about it. You're going to learn about the blue dress, You're not going to learn about you're not going to learn about something about, like what led up to 911 or something like that. In an impeachment. You see what I mean? So with Trump, I don't know. I'm still hoping I'll win my bet with the sex tape. Something like that may come forward in the next couple of weeks to help with the election campaign and to get the American public's attention focused where they want it. But, just ignore it. Just it's theater. There isn't any, substance to it. They're just trying to distract. If you're going to spend time, you do spend time researching, as to how they use propaganda to control you. That's what I would say. I mean, is that like, I think it's going to be very distracting, and I think they're going to have, it's going to be in the news quite a bit over the next couple months. But I hope it doesn't have a bad effect on people and hope they resist it.
Yep. Okay, Joe.
Well, brother, I look forward to seeing you and talking with you next week. Have a great week.
You too. Bye-bye. Okay.